be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. A somebody who will swear to be true as you used to do with me. Who'll leave you to learn that misery loves company. Wait and see. I mean, I wanna be around to see how he does it when he breaks your heart to bits. Let's see if the puzzle fits so fine. And that's when I'll discover that revenge is sweet, as I sit there applauding from a front row seat. When somebody breaks your heart like you.
There we go with one of my favorite songs. Yeah, Tony Bennett, man. And also it has double meaning. I dedicate that to the Empire. I dedicate that song to the Empire because if you listen to it close, it can have two meanings. And that's another thing I wanted to talk to you about. Now, you can take music and turn it into coded messages. And you don't have to do too hardly anything to do it. And so there's usually a message in these songs that can be taken one or two ways. So think about it. Listen to the words. I'm trying to find that 52 card. I think it's 52 cards in the deck, right? That cryptographic application of a 52 card deck, and I'm going to find it, because old George King out there in California taught it to me years and two or three decades ago, and over time I've forgotten it. But if you've got a contact and you've got a deck of cards, you can have a new code anytime you want it. Yeah, something you may need someday. Yeah, so I'll try to find that. Maybe somebody out there remembers that program. Hey, it's Terrible Tommy in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana on a cold, rainy, sloppy day, overcast. Yeah, and not my favorite kind of day, but it's not snowing, and it's up in the 50s at least, going to get up to 70 by Thursday, so that sounds good. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show and donations for other projects. And I just picked up some more money orders today to get them all filled out to send to a few of the prisoners, so POWs. And as long as you support the cause, we can do a few things like that. Not big scale, not big time, not hundreds, not thousands, not even dozens, really. But we do our best. I got a letter yesterday from somebody. I'm not even going to mention a name. You wouldn't believe it. One of the most badass guys in the world, or at least in the United States, that avoided capture for a long, long time. And I got a letter from him from the federal prison, or a note. Actually, just a short note and a couple of dollar bills. So I'm going to get in touch with him. I see whether it's the same guy. Yeah. Well, I got another letter here from one of our supporters, one of our lone wolves. I like your radio broadcast on A Man Called Lucy and the mention of the book Adolf Hitler, the Creator of Israel. I also like your discussion of the Civil War. There is one thread through all of these wars. The white leadership keeps selling whites out. The hierarchy of the Nazi regime had out-and-out spies. Yeah, there were at least the central core of the spy cell for Lucy was 10 in the high command. Not privates. These guys were all the way at the top. And many of them had Jewish blood in their veins. Well, I'm not sure about Jewish blood, whether that can be characterized or not, but I know what you mean. They had Jews, at least in the background. In the case of the Civil War, you had Puritans on both sides, quoting the Bible and doing the Jews' bidding. This is nothing new or recent. In order for Julius Caesar to get power and to get as far as he did, he needed the backing of the Jewish organizations. Emperor Constantine, after wiping out unruly Jewish tribes at Masada, he made Christianity the official religion of Rome. Boy, that was a real... That's what gave it its big push. If they hadn't had that push from Rome, Christianity would have remained a small Jewish cult. The common thread throughout history is that the white race was always saddled with leadership that didn't care about its race, only its power and wealth and position. They were always willing to deal with a certain alien minority to gain these advantages and keep their own people in check. This has been going on through recorded history and has to stop for the survival of our race. We has to have leadership. We have to have leadership that understands their race comes first, last, and always. They have to understand there will be repercussions for selling out or treasonous activity. And we have to make sure that it's actively our people in charge. Yours truly, Wolf New York. How about that? Well, that's true. The main failure of the race has been to police itself and allow corrupt, homicidal warmongers and so forth to get in control of the economy and everything, the media, everything. And there's only one way to solve that problem, at least on a temporary basis. And I've inferred it and talked about it till I'm blue in the face. It's not going to come by having gang fights out on the street. It's not going to come by joining organizations and marching up and down the street with flags and so forth. It's going to come from cleaning house. I call it the Pol Pot solution. That drives everybody crazy. But the Pol Pot solution, whether it was appropriately applied or not, is questionable. But still, and even like the French Revolution, right, wrong, or indifferent, they didn't mess around. They cleaned house. And, you know, that's what has to be done. Nothing less will change anything. So that takes time to build. Like my clock here, it says tick, 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 tick. And you can't rush it. You can't push it. You can inch it along, do your thing. Do a little bit here, a little bit there, till more and more of the Lilliputians decide to tie Gulliver down. Yeah, get all those strings and a million strings and string that son of a gun down. Okay, well, let's see here. Oh, yeah, beware the eyes of Mars, boys and girls. Yeah, that's what they told Caesar. Beware the eyes of March. And we do be in... we're over March now. We're into April, so... I should have told you to beware the eyes of March last month. That shows you how up-to-date I am. Oh, guess who's coming to dinner? And breakfast. And jobs and everything else. See, a lot of people think this is all an accident. All these people coming in here from all over the place, and all these millions of non-white mestizos and others from Central America. No, it's all part of the plan. It's all a part of the plan to totally dilute our racial strength here in the United States. And they know the powers that be don't shit yourself. They know that race mixing is not good. They really do. They have all the money and everything to research it, and all the scientists to look it over and think about it. Well, anyhow, they're dumping thousands of these kids from Mexico and Central America in the United States now. These anchor babies or whatever you want to call it. Well, not anchor babies, just more illegal aliens are coming in by the thousands. And they're opening the door wide for them. It's no surprise. But they've dumped hundreds and maybe thousands of them into southern Louisiana. Yeah, like, you know, a very poor part of the country, really. And guess what? They're dumping them into black schools for the most part. Now, you know what that's causing? The blacks are going, black kids are going crazy. And they're fighting in the schools and so forth. But now they're trying to spread it out, to spread all these kids out that don't have somebody already here from their country they came from, to sprinkle them around in all our communities, you see. And, of course, there's enough sob sisters like there always is. The liberal-type thinker on that issue is insane. They are infected with that gene that says, we must mix up. We got to mix up, baby. We're never going to go anyplace unless we mix up. And mixing up will make a great race. We'll be better than ever, man. This civilization will really fly. Bullshit. Anyhow, get ready, because there'll be tens and hundreds of them probably coming into your community too, because the State Department is going to push this program, and the President's going to push this program, and the Republicans are going to push this program. Don't let them kid you. They're not really that interested in stopping it. They go through the motions. That's all they do. There's nobody up there really wants to get serious about deportation and stopping these people at the border. No, they know exactly what they're doing. And that's why I hate some boy. You don't say you belong to a hate group. No, I don't belong to a hate group. I belong to me hate. And anybody else can hate too if they want to. But they do it under the color of racial liberalism and Christianity and Judaism, and now it's going to be Islam that are surrounding us like the Indians did when we had our wagon train. It's going to be us or them. Going to be us or them at some point. So far, it's just us. There's a race war going on, but we're not fighting. I mean, our people are not fighting. The other side's doing all the fighting. Yep. My mother used to say, more blood in the gutter and me without a spoon, and that's what will happen as time goes on. You think Ferguson, Missouri? That's nothing. I mean, these things aren't even as wild as back in the 60s with Malcolm X, when they were kicking ass in the black neighborhoods and so forth. Yeah, they almost had this country in wrapped up back then. The word was that if the blacks had started burning a couple of more cities in the United States, it would have been out of control because they'd run out of troops. They sent in the 101st Airborne most of the time, but you can only send in so many troops. But they got it under control. Next time, I don't think they're going to get it under control, because I think you're going to see blacks doing it, mestizos doing it, and whites doing it. They'll all be coming to the party. Well, Netanyahu, he's still moaning the blues about Iran. He's just fixated with destroying Iran. You notice how not anybody ever says, well, wait a minute, you don't want them to have atomic weapons, but you got over 200 bombs and missiles, maybe a lot more. Why don't you agree to get rid of half of them, or maybe three quarters of them? No, they wouldn't do that. And all these Christ insanity people here, they support Israel making a move on Iran, and also they're developing new big bunker busters in preparation. So anyhow, happy World War III. We're very close, very close. Well, let's continue with our little book here, The Race Problem. I think we may reprint this book. It's got 96 pages in it. We also must recognize that times and conditions necessarily modify every rule of action, theoretical and practical. We must judge according to the limitations of intelligence and environment of each person or group of persons. Allowance must be made for the appraiser and his imperfections. Now, let me get one point straight here that I haven't said much about, and that is, the plan, of course, was to dumb down the white race to the level of Negroes. And with the excuse, the system excuse was they're going to bring the blacks up. But they didn't, they haven't done that. So they're bringing the white race down. So you got to understand that a lot of the mulattoes are pretty sharp people, at least in the first generation. And if they study hard and work hard at what they want to do, they can surpass the average white man. Especially the white man that's been dumbed down, drugged down, alcohol down, and just plain become inferior. So white people cannot live on their laurels, lay back and say, well, we're superior. Well, I think you get what I mean. And when I look around to society in the streets and the shopping centers, I'm telling you, it's a sad, sad situation. Misuse of legislative authority. There are two distinct evils in the American practice of dealing with fundamental problems. One is the attempt to find a solution by passing a law before public opinion has been formed, and the other is assumed authority of our courts to control opinion by the construction of laws and annulling of statutes in an effort to compel the people to conform to the judicial concept of what is best. And always remember, you can pass all the laws you want. Number one, if you don't have the money to support the program and enforce the program, it doesn't mean anything. They've made all kinds of laws that have never been used. You know, Simpson-Mazzoli was a perfect example. It had pretty much a, you know, summation of the what needed to be done, and the plan was there to do it about illegal immigration. But they let it die. They just didn't enforce it. So no matter how many laws they make, if they're not enforced or financed, they're nothing. But congressmen and senators don't think that way. They want the headlines. Well, we passed this Simpson-Mazzoli thing. Now we can sit back and sit on our ass. Well, you see what happened. It didn't make a dent. Didn't do anything. Both legislator and judge should understand that the source of law is power in the hands of a majority determined to enforce its will. Well, I'm looking around for that. I don't see much of that going on. And back of that are the forces and influences which shape and form public opinion. Yeah, the media. Yeah, the, what do you call that? The, what do you call that? Sort of like the Trojan horse. Yeah. Both should realize and accept in its hard and practical sense the fact that they are the agents and not the principals. Well, they are the principals now. This was written back about 1960, 59, so the year I got out of the Army. The legislatures are eternally trying to direct and guide human progress. I don't think so. I think they do just the opposite. Or to make it go contrary to public opinion, or to accelerate its gait. Well, the major press, corporate press, manipulate public opinion. That's easy. They've always done that. Especially is this true of bureaucrats and reformers. None of these things can be done. The judges are either trying to stop progress or force it to travel the beaten paths. Thus, the legislatures are seeking to compel humanity to get someplace in a hurry, while the judges want it to go nowhere. The harm done by the legislative bodies comes mainly from the failure to understand that a law seeking to direct human destiny and to control public habits and common practices must be the expression of public opinion and be supported by the unmistakable will of the majority. Well, they may think they do that, but it doesn't happen. They're manipulated all the time to do what the system wants them to do. They're always way out in front of the average person with their plans and their treason or whatever. The legislature itself may deal with minor routine and administrative matters relating to details. The duties of officials, those laws affecting the particular groups of underendowed people, members of legislative bodies, both state and national, are unable generally to distinguish between the two classes of laws. Our system of election favors the selection of legislators representing what Theodore Roosevelt termed the lunatic fringe. And those who promise each group and bloc what it wants. Well, that's the way democracies always end up. So-called democracies. This certainly isn't one. Truly, the East is East and the West is West, and never the twain shall meet. The Creator made them as they are, and the wise man accepts the work of the Maker. Foolish men seek to remake races according to their crazy plans, and when they have done their worst, the subjects are twofold more children of hell than before. The attempt to change a race of people in such a way as to reach a planned result is monstrously preposterous. It's fantastic. No man can dictate what his own son will become. Regardless of planning, laws, schools, and the precept, our children are not uniform products as planned. Race is beyond man-made law. How then consider changing a whole race according to a plan? It cannot be done. These general principles apply to all races in any age. They govern the slow pace of all the races of men. Each goes its way, creating its language, laws, customs as it travels. the introduction of custom and laws, which are foreign effects and racial course, but cannot make two distinct races pursue a parallel course. For example, the life of the Mongol in North America, in the case of the Negro in America, we have a race removed from its homeland and set down among a wholly different race. Again, it's impossible to make the two races travel parallel courses, but our theorists insist that the course be not only parallel but identical, and the rate of progress be the same, which is impossible. It is here we join issue and insist that the white man and the black man cannot progress in the same way and at the same rate. There should be a frank admission of differences found to exist, and provisions made for those peculiar qualities of each race. The permanent adjustment of the race question depends on the recognition of this principle. There's no need for race hostility, and no need or gain for one race to hate another. I don't know about that. I think hatred has something to do with it, to protect the borders of your race and so forth. And I don't think people should be apologizing for hating another race, generally speaking. Ordinarily, there is no dislike between the races or the members of two races. Well, I don't believe that. I guess he hasn't been down to Mobile. This thing of race prejudice and race friction and conflict rises only when two distinct races attempt to dwell together in fairly equal numbers and on a basis of equality. Well, that's what's happening now. Of course, it was sort of that way when the book was written, but it's even worse now. The more you try to force the races together and coax them together, they're going to hate each other more and more. There's no doubt. Perhaps the race prejudice is a wise and natural instinct to preserve man in clearly defined species. The feeling is so age-old and worldwide that it's entitled to respect, at least. Race antagonism is natural and instinctive, and it's just one evidence of our dislike of what is different. Its existence proves we are human. Differences in color, language, religion, nationality, and a host of other things cause antagonisms and prevent affection and friendship. Our friends are those who have much in common with us. It is foolish to hope for cordial relations on any other basis. The Negrophiles prove the point by their hatred, real prejudice, of their fellow citizens who do not accept their ideas. In every place on earth, there is more or less strife between races and peoples. Well, look at the third world. Look how it's exploded. It's not all just the predatory capitalists, but they take advantage of that splits even among black tribes. They want to kill each other. The basic trouble is just difference. This difference ranges all the way from the color of the skin to social, religious, and political ideas. This worldwide occurrence of race antagonism is governed by the same general principles. As already stated categorically, race friction arises when two diverse kinds of people are brought into contact. It is intensified by the presence of approximately equal numbers of the two groups, especially if there is social and political equality. See, there you go. Another factor which increases the dislike is economic competition. Race dislike and hostility are diminished by separation and the fixing of definite geographical boundaries, also a fixing a status of superior and inferior, where two races are nearly equal in numbers. These facts are accepted by all who have the knowledge of the question and are proven by all experience. Now, you're going to see what's happening as the black and white population is shrinking, like here in North America and most places around the world, and as the non-white races are multiplying at a fantastic rate, as they become more equal in population, then the shit's really going to hit the fan. It should be stated emphatically that racial differences and other differences as well cause friction and antagonism to a greater extent in Democratic or Republican countries than where government is in the hands of a relatively small ruling class. So actually, probably racially, we'd be better in a country run by a true oligarchy, racially oriented oligarchy. To give equal rights and privileges to hostile groups in the same republic is to invite hatred, disorder, and destruction. Now here we got some more on Lincoln, but in one of his debates with Judge Douglas, our great past president, I don't call him great, Abraham Lincoln said, "I have no purpose to introduce political or social equality between the white and blacks." There's a physical difference. We've read this before. It's in another part of this book. So anyhow, I'm going to skip that. Old Honest Abe. Most of the pure Negro leaders have a higher conception of the situation and use far better judgment than the white theorists, venal politicians, and a few mulatto agitators. The two latter groups seek the enfranchisement of ignorant and incompetent Negroes that their own sordid ends may be served. Their aim is not the welfare of the Negro, but the enrichment of themselves as the pretended benefactors of the Negro. Among all self-respecting peoples, behind the talk and pretense, lies an elemental, perhaps subconscious, purpose to defend and protect the vital sources of life. Instinct, better than reason, knows that a race is extinct when it is a half-breed. Get that again. Instinct, better than reason, knows that a race is extinct when it is a half-breed. And boy, we've got millions of half-breeds in this country. Man must realize that no one can proceed contrary to the laws of nature with impunity. If a man insists on integration of the races, nature will react with the emergence of such new problems and changes in genetics and in emotional, mental, and intellectual disturbances that the entire population of nations, countries, and of peoples will be affected according to their detriment. Then physical, emotional, mental, moral, and spiritual decadence will have set in. And boy, I tell you, it has totally set in this country. The question arises, how dare man boast of his mechanical and materialistic achievements when they interfere with the spiritual laws of nature and of the universe of which he knows very little or nothing at all? Man, in his egotism, thinks that he can improve on nature, and he thinks to step into the fields outside of his jurisdiction. Man, furthermore, insists on trying to justify his actions in so doing. Therefore, in continuing to think and act along the present lines, man proclaims the laws of nature are wrong and he is right. Well, that came out of Christianity. The big push on that, to deny nature, came out of Christianity. And you hear these fools, Christian Zionists, running around now, don't worry about climate change or anything, because Jesus is coming. We're all going to be raptured. All the good people, that's not us, are going to be raptured out, and all that kind of stuff. So it comes down through humanism and everything else. Insanity. According to the natural law of affinity, or of the like attracts like, animals of the same species and men of the same habits, aesthetic, and intellectual development gravitate together. Cows, goats, sheep, and horses may graze together in the field, but when the time comes for them to retire to their sleeping quarters, the animals of each of these different species will segregate in one place and keep themselves separate from all other animals. Things and beings of different characteristics just do not mix. When the difference in the characteristics and nature between animals is too great, the very moment that they meet, they fight each other to death, like a cat and a mouse. Or a dog and a rabbit, a wolf and a sheep. These type of animals must remain separate for the sake of their mutual health and safety. In the same way, types among men of great psychological, aesthetic, and intellectual differences should be separated for the sake of their own health, safety, and peace in physical, moral, mental, and spiritual, and those of society in which they live. This results in the segregation of the races, which is in harmony with the natural law. This is the reason for which, when a sober person finds himself in the company of drunkards, he feels uneasy, and as soon as possible, he separates himself from the uncongenial surrounding. Many times, veterinarians have a similar experience when eating in the company of meat eaters, drunkards, and smokers, vice versa. The other person may be their relatives or close friends. Nevertheless, they feel in the innermost of their hearts a repulsive feeling growing within them, pulling them away from this uncongenial environment. They just can't help it. It is the working of the psychological law of harmony which was broken. People who are forced under adverse circumstances or by ignorance to live under such physical, psychological, and intellectual inharmonious conditions will gradually develop a certain mental and emotional disturbances, which in due time will manifest into certain kinds of ailments and make you sick. We believe that the present day increase in the mental ailments is a result of the breaking of this natural and psychological law of affinity, or of like attracts like. In the existing inharmonious surrounding in the home, in society, in the press, radio, and television, all over the country. It's a fact that everything vibrates, and at the same time it radiates, sending out invisible rays of various types and potencies, which as such penetrate men everywhere in their everyday life, and they affect us according for the better or for the worse. We also know that the inharmonious angle and ugly modernistic designs and shapes of buildings, as well as the aluminum and plastic materials used in our buildings, homes, furniture, utensils, and even our clothes, contribute to a great extent with their unwholesome and inharmonious vibrations and radiations to the present-day epidemic of mysterious sicknesses and of mental ailments which our people are afflicted. The American Institute of Architects speaks. This opinion of ours, as explained above, seems to be confirmed by prominent architects of today, according to the report published in the New York Times, June 25, 1959, Minoru Yamanosuke, a Detroit architect, won a warm acclaim at the convention of the American Institute of Architects in the Hotel Roosevelt in New Orleans, Louisiana, when he stated that today's chaotic society could only be further damaged by having its discordance reflected in modern design of architecture. He urged his colleague to go back to the classical beauty, incorporating in it contemporary buildings. Classical serenity and beauty, he said, will serve as an antidote to the turbulent period that we now live in. Incidentally, boys and girls, as a train went through town today, I happened to be stopped and waiting on it. There must have been 100 military trucks, light trucks, like we used to have, like 3/4-ton trucks in the Army. They looked about that size, and they were just basic. They didn't have the tops on or anything. Headed straight south. I wonder where those are going. Maybe to Africa or the Middle East. Who knows? Well, anyhow, back to the book. He further declared that we must be concerned that our buildings do not pick up this quality of inharmonious design and turn it back into our lives. Mr. Yamasaki further added that besides the serenity and quality of delight in building designs is essential in incorporating the effects of the play of the sun and the shadow, the use of texture and materials to give pleasure, and silhouetting of a building against the sky. Now, I believe Mr. Yamasaki was the architect of the World Trade Center. I have an interview with him in a recording. In fact, I've got a record. I'm going to send it to you or play it for you one of these days. In the middle of the night, the other night, they had somehow they put a phone machine up there in New York and told people to call in about their memories of the World Trade Center. And it's quite interesting from the time before it was even built. That was called the Radio Town, Radio City. It was where they had all kinds of stores selling radio parts. And that was what was there before they built the Trade Center. But they interviewed Yamaminsky back in 1960, I believe it was. These opinions are shared by several other architects, one of whom, Mr. Pereira, declared, quote, "We are so afraid of being labeled artists that we are in danger of becoming only artisans, and that we have traded White Tower for the white collar and Divining Rod for the slide rule. Nature, in order to counteract the consequences of all this inharmonious conditions and associations in life, makes one feel the urge to express himself, to give way to his psychological and emotional feelings which have accumulated and press on him. In this way, the new very moment he does this, he releases himself from the inner pressure and he feels better. However, for permanent results, man must change his present inharmonious surroundings. This method of treatment on such patients was used by the ancient Greek in the ancient Greek temples of Esculapius and Trophonius." The reader is referring to our book, Divinations, The Art of Prophecy. Well, I don't have much confidence in prophecy. Today, if one expresses himself according to his true inner feelings and knowledge, he may be accused either of belonging to one of the many undesirable isms in our country, or his expressed opinion may be considered as nonsensical since it belongs to the very small minority of thinkers. I guess that's what they consider me. Yeah, small minority of thinkers. The same law of harmony applies also to the physical inharmonious surroundings in which we live, slums and dirty places, as well as fat, sick, flabby-dressed men and women unconsciously reflect upon others and they influence them accordingly, which results in the end in emotion and mental physical ailments. Well, that bothers me, I'll tell you, when you look around and see a totally unfit society. And I'm not saying I'm the most fit guy around, but within reason, you need a fit society. We're a long way from that. This is the reason, based upon the psychological law of harmony, for the creation of beautiful temples, statues, and other masterpieces of buildings in all ancient Greek cities and villages of the Greeks. The gymnasium served as the builders of symmetrical, beautiful, and strong bodies, whereas the beautiful and harmonious surroundings in the Greek homes and cities served for the physical, emotional, and mental health and the spiritual development of the citizens. In ancient Sparta, Naucides, son of the Polybiades, was summoned before the city authorities and accused of negligence of himself, gluttony and lack of exercise, which were responsible for his developing a fat, grotesque, sickly, and ailing body. He was threatened with the payment of a heavy fine and then to be sent to exile from the city unless he changed his present way of living and the disciplines of the rest of the citizens. He reduced himself back to normalcy within a certain period of time. The authorities ruled that such a fat, ugly, sick man served not only as a bad example to others, but that also his inharmonious and repulsive appearance was breaking the aesthetic and mental harmony of the whole community. We firmly believe that we need very badly such a law for the health of our people, physical, emotional, and mental, today. At present, a person who commits an act which is considered harmful to the peace and welfare of the community in which he lives is persecuted and punished by law. Why then not have a similar law enacted to which all sick, fat, and grotesque persons are summoned before a special court of health? Experts then should pass judgment upon all persons who are violating the laws of health and harmony in our community and sentence them to abide by the laws of healthy and harmonious living. In case of disobedience, to have them confined to a health farm where in a proper aesthetic and cultural environment and under expert directions, they will work themselves out from under this present sickly condition and be brought back again to health. Let us all think seriously about this suggestion. You know, this guy, he's right down the line with me. If you look around, you look at society, and it's not healthy. It's miserable. In fact, I had a contemporary associate way back in the, let's see, that was in the, it was the late 70s, I believe. He even started a group called the White, I forget now what it was, but it had to do with white beauty and the need to develop healthy, beautiful people. White, healthy, beautiful people. And he was a young man, and unfortunately he became so despondent over the whole mess that he committed suicide. It was a bad loss because he was a really good man. But he looked around at society and he saw how decadent and corrupt it was physically and mentally, and he couldn't take it. I'm sure that instead of raising millions of dollars and spending them in manufacture of dangerous, toxic vaccines and other drug concoctions, as well as the building of more hospitals, all of which contributes to increased sickness and degeneration, our people should be taught from the kindergarten up to college how to live properly, how to think constructively, how to exercise and keep themselves in beautiful and harmonious surroundings. Then most of our hospitals and jails will close. This will add to the health, freedom, and dignity of the American nation, which was chosen by divine providence to lead the world on its upward progress. Boy, we really screwed that up, didn't we? Man's responsibility. Man, not being content with politics in his everyday walk of life, he's now bringing politics into the spiritual realms of the universe. This is forbidden by divine law, and the result is man's present-day confusion, suffering from the lack of spiritual understanding of the peace of mind and of happiness. Nature is conquered not by man's arrogance or by force, but only through obedience to her laws in their application and in his everyday life. Man, before we will be able to develop mentally and spiritually, must first acquire the control of his physical body, eating, resting, exercising, and recreation, then to control himself emotionally and mentally. The law is, in order to be able to control the higher one, must first learn to control the lower. This is not an easy task for everyone is to accomplish. It is not being taught in our schools or institutions of learning under our present system of miseducation. This intellectual and spiritual development is a matter of founded on heredity, on racial characteristics, and on deeply rooted causes nurtured in the subconscious mind of the individual. Book knowledge alone in the schools worsens conditions. This requires a very long time, generations of proper mating, harmonious family conditions, moral surroundings, and the exertion of the trained willpower of the individual in order to be able to accomplish his liberation from the present low plan of existence to the higher step on the path of evolution and truth. How the law operates. Today we're living in a materialistic age, and consequently the consciousness of the majority of humanity is focused on things material, which man can see, touch, examine with his five senses. However, all philosophers and religious leaders of the world know that behind the material forms of things and beings are spiritual entities, souls, and the spirit of nature, which manifests through all the physical forms we see in nature. Man, before he is able to do anything, has to think first of what he wants to do. Therefore, the first step in all our rational actions is to conceive or to create in our mind the pattern of what we want to create, or to perform, or form on the physical plane of our existence. Spirit comes first, and material manifestation follows as its faithful consequence. There's always a close relationship between the thought pattern and the physical form. Our body and parts thereof through which this thought has to be expressed. Thus the function of the activities of our invisible soul manifests on the physical plane for the soul's communication with our fellow man. For example, suppose the soul of a great musician conceives a composition. He first creates his composition in his mind. He wants to express it to his fellow man on the physical plane of existence, but he has no musical instrument. He may be dumb, or his vocal cords may be missing, or not developed, nor sufficiently trained to enable him to express the musical composition which is in his mind. In this case, the musician, in spite of all his efforts for physical manifestations, can never objectively express his beautiful mental creation. Such a condition will impede both his own mental and spiritual development and the society in which he lives. Therefore, such an unbalanced condition will be an obstacle to the cosmic law of evolution, which is the plan and purpose of creation. Okay, let's see here. That's about it for today, I think. And we're going to leave this one set for a little while and go on to back to one of our other books we're working on in the days coming up. Incidentally, sometimes you have to practice a little restraint. I had this really intense arm problem, pain, some type of a nerve situation, and it had healed itself, or at least I thought, and I started lifting barbells again, doing 50 reps at a time, and I put myself right back into the same situation, so I'm going to have to take it easy and let my old body heal itself. I guess I'm not 20 years old again when it comes to lifting weights. Well, I see the medical industry is in trouble again in what can only be described as a horrific medical scandal similar to the Tuskegee study. More than 750 plaintiffs are suing this prestigious Johns Hopkins Hospital System Corporation for $1 billion. The Guardian is reporting that the hospital played a role in experiments that came to light in 2010 in which orphans, other children, and mental patients were intentionally infected with sexually transmitted diseases without their consent between 1945 and 1956. The experiments were allegedly led by the U.S. government, your friend, the U.S. government, and more than 1,000 Guatemalans were infected with syphilis and other STDs. According to Ron Jenkins, one of the lead attorneys for the victim, says that the U.S. federal government only provided the funding for the experiments, that the experiments itself was designed, promoted, organized, and implemented and assisted by these defendants. Susan Reverby, a college professor and medical historian, is responsible for uncovering information about the experiments after digging through the archives of the University of Pittsburgh. One of the most sinister things about the experiments is that there were no findings published, and none of the Guatemalans who participated were informed that they were infected or offered follow-up medical care or education about how to prevent the spread of STDs. More than 5,500 prisoners, sex workers, soldiers, children, and psychiatric patients were involved in the experiment. According to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, researchers infected Guatemalan sex workers with gonorrhea or syphilis and then aimed to spread the diseases by allowing the infected sex workers to have sex with soldiers and prison inmates. Talk about Dr. Strangelove. I mean, this your government's been rotten for a long time. I mean, these are sick bastards. The Rockefeller Foundation is named in the lawsuit along with John Hopkins and accuses both institutions of helping to design, support, encourage, and finance the experiments by specifically employing scientists and physicians who used the tests to determine if penicillin was capable of preventing STDs. Well, I'm sure they could have figured that out. Without infecting 1,000 people, even though they were Guatemalans, I mean, let's be real here. Well, things are looking up a little bit. In an ironic twist, Reverend Samuel Musteller, Negro, who is head of the Georgia chapter of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, has called for black families to arm themselves against police violence. The irony comes because SCLC was founded by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to help promote social change through nonviolent tactics, frowning upon not just violence, but armed resistance of any kind. Well, he was very violent. He knew exactly what he was doing. There's different ways of doing it. During the press conference earlier this week, Musteller pointed out that nonviolence hasn't worked. Well, of course it doesn't work. In terms of stemming the rising tide of police killing of unarmed men or anybody killing anybody, Musteller's advice to black families is that they should exercise their Second Amendment rights to bear arms for the protection of their family members against police violence in a country that's become unsafe for them. Well, I partially agree with that from his point of view, too. The white race has got the same problem, maybe not quite as extensive, but being that there's a lot more people, that white people, that the cops are picking on over a large society, it's a major problem for us too, because very little of this police violence against white working class people ever hits the news or never hits the international and national news. You find it back in the back of the paper where they have used cars. Well, I think that'll move things along pretty good if the Black Ku Klux Klan begins to reverse the charges on these cops. Well, here's a 51-year-old woman, a white woman, said what she thinks. A 51-year-old white woman allegedly attacked a black couple who happened to be her refugee neighbors. The incident was captured on video, and the disturbing footage was uploaded to Facebook and has since gone viral. What started as a racist argument between neighbors quickly turned into a brutal physical attack with a crowbar. The two clips of the abusive attack, believed to have taken place last week, were uploaded to Facebook earlier today with the caption, "Someone asked me how was my weekend. This is what happens with my neighbor." The footage begins with a seemingly upset white woman going into a racist attack speech against her neighbor, stating, quote, "I don't deal with monkeys. Go on, you fucking monkeys. Look at this fucking pigs. Jungle niggers you are." The woman can also be seen carrying a metal crowbar, swinging it at her neighbors as she screams, "You yellow-eyed motherfucker, get out to where you come from, you black cunt. Get out of this place. Nobody wants you." There you go. Her neighbors were from the Congo. Jeez. The Congo. Wow. Well, I give that woman credit, 51-year-old lady. These adults were young, black, and, you know, in good physical shape. She took them on with a crowbar. Good for you. And I see the video that somebody took of this particular incident is no longer available because YouTube account associated with this video has been terminated. You see, if it goes the white way, YouTube turns them off. Hear what this white honky's got to say here. Come on, speak up.
I'm coming to you here in my truck today. I got a Ford F-150. And I like it. Yeah, I'm redneck. Always have been. But is rednecks reformed? Many years I was a racist. And I didn't like blacks. I used to call me N-word and whatnot. And now I come a point and realize there's some personal experiences. White people are racist. Not all of them. But white culture is. Our white country is. Our nation is. Our American culture is full of white supremacy. And we live in a white supremacist culture that caters to white people. Everything from the media to education to art to culture to politics is whitewashed. Wanting to change your heart. Part of it is fear. Another part of it is greed. We don't want to lose benefit. The system of white supremacy has created. We're scared of black retribution. We're scared shitless. We got a lot of fucking fear, man. Yeah, we do. That's what we do. Throw them in jail. Then we pretend that black people are as racist as white people. But hell, if they do hate, it's a hate that hate produces. It's a anger that anger produces. Face reality. Our country is a country of white fucking supremacy. Yes, sir, it is. Let's take some fucking responsibility.
There's a good old boy white trucker down there. He thinks he's got it figured out there. I'll tell you, that's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. In the meantime, keep on trucking, man. Keep on trucking. 14-5.
I guess it's guilt. I don't know. It's like blacks make me feel guilty. Sorry. Arabs make me feel guilty. Jews make me feel guilty. I don't know. I just feel like everything by being a white man, I'm the guilty party. This 911 thing. I mean, you know, it sort of puts us all in the same pot, right? You know, blacks, whites. It doesn't matter. But well, it's fear too. I got to tell you, my fear. I'm scared to get on an airplane. I'm scared to fly anymore. I was supposed to have a conference in Las Vegas next week. I'm scared to death to go there.
9/11 is a different world, ain't it? And shock, just stunned. And it took that to make white folks realize that we're human beings. Yeah, you understand? You know? Because they were so worried about us. America is so worried about black folks. They were so worried about the land niggers, they forgot about the sand niggers. Now, a lot of you are clapping. A lot of you house niggers are scared. You're going to get us in trouble. No emotion, no reaction. You black, you live in America, you in trouble. I can't get you in no trouble. So worried about us, huh? And then the rumors started. They said it was black folks. It was black folks. Black folks did that. I knew there wasn't no black people. Ain't no niggas did that. We don't commit suicide. No. If that had been black people flying that plane, you'd have saw a whole bunch of parachutes. And do-rags. And I want to thank, on behalf of black America, because I'm a black person, I want to thank white America. Thank you. Thank you, white America, for making us tough. Because we'll get through this terrorist stuff. You made us, white folks made us tough. Because they've been terrorizing us for 500 years. sicking dogs, putting water holes, lynching us. We're used to terrorists. This ain't no big deal to us. I'm worried about white folks. I'm worried about my white friends. They ain't going to make it through this. They're not used to this. I've lost two or three white friends. They've cracked up. They took them to the crazy house. They can't handle this. They asked me for my ID at least 5 times, dude. What the hell do they want from me? They can't handle this profiling. I'm opening up the school, How to Be a Nigger in America and Survive. They're not going to make it. Thank you, white folks, for making us tough. Because black folks will get through this, just like we did slavery. You real niggas know what I'm talking about, just like we got. You house niggas don't have a clue. But you real niggas know what I'm talking about. We will get through this, just like we got through slavery. We will hum our way through this. You real niggas know what I'm talking about. You know what? You feel me? White folks, don't try this at home by yourself. You might hurt yourself. You know we're going to get through this. And them white people who taught them Middle Eastern folks to fly in Miami ought to be put under the jail. Lock them all up. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know what was going on. Them 12 Middle Eastern people went down there in Miami and learned to fly. I bet 12 niggas couldn't have did that. 12 niggas would have went there to a flight school. The FBI would have been there the next hour. What are you niggas up to? Since when was there an airport in Harlem? World War II, we was fighting on the white folks' side, and they didn't want to teach us to fly. But they sit up there teaching the Middle Eastern folks, who was up in class talking about, how you make U-turn? Sir, this is the part where we land. No land, no land. How you make U-turn? You teach me karate? '9/11, baby. And the building fell, the walls came tumbling down. Didn't it? White folks got scared. White folks were scared. When white folks get scared, I get scared. White folks were scared. I ain't seen white folks this scared since the last Indian raid. White folks didn't even know God before 9/11. Baby, they just got God, and God bless America, and God, and God, and God, and God. God's back in school now, and God, and God. White folks that took God out of school, he back in there now, and God, help us, God, God help us! Black folks, you know we know God. We know God. You get white folks on the plane, they'll start cursing and stuff. And God damn it, on my bank account, and hell, I'm going to die. The hell out of here. We get on a plane, a bunch of niggas, and start crying. We start singing, you got shoes, I got shoes, all God children got. When we get to heaven, God hear us and make the plane come back up. The plane be flying right.